Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
From the Evening Standard in London, I'm Mark Blunden, and this is The Leader. Have you looked anything up on Wikipedia today? But what if you're a spy? Surely this general resource isn't much good for hunting baddies, rooting out moles? Well, you might be surprised to know the CIA's got its own wiki. It's called Intellipedia, obviously. And we've had the rare chance to speak with one of the specialists instrumental in its creation. She's called Carmen Medina, is one of the highest ranking women ever to have worked for the agency. And she joins us for her first British broadcast interview. Over 32 years, Carmen rose from analyst to deputy director for intelligence, working under six presidents from Carter to Obama. She retired in 2010 and recently spoke at an event hosted by Safe House Global, looking at whether TikTok and its China links pose a cybersecurity risk to the US. So, Carmen, how was the tech culture at Langley back in 1978 when you joined?
I like to say that my career spanned from typewriter to Twitter. When I started at CIA, we had old manual typewriters and the secret cables and press reports and information that flowed into the building got printed on paper by these old-fashioned teletype machines. So one kind of phenomenon was that you might have 10 analysts working on one part of the world, but they only had that one copy of whatever piece of information had arrived. So it was not unheard of for an analyst, particularly ambitious analyst, to squirrel away a juicy, sexy piece of information so that the other analysts couldn't see it. I mean, it's kind of ludicrous if you think about it, but humans are humans and they behave badly.
And now CIA agents across the world have access to this huge resource. How was the idea developed?
It started out in the mid-1990s when the internet arrived, and I just happened to be one of those people that thought the internet was going to change everything. I just felt any knowledge organization was just going to get blasted by the internet, and I thought the CIA is essentially a knowledge organization. And for years, I tried to make that case and made very little headway. But in the mid-2000s, I was a senior analytic manager, and now I was in a position to advance these ideas. And two young men, yes, people working for me, came up to me one day and said, hey, you know, we're going to bring the Wikimedia software, the software that runs Wikipedia, we're going to get an installment of it and use it behind our firewall so it's safe. And we think we should use it to organize the intelligence community's knowledge. And I said, that's a brilliant idea, but from my own past experience, I knew that the agency would be very slow to adapt to it. And so I learned a lot about making kind of a stealth change initiative. We encourage people when they develop the body of knowledge to post it on Intellipedia. Originally, by the way, it was supposed to be called Iraqipedia because the first use case was the Iraq War, but it quickly changed and you know, thank goodness, became Intellipedia. There were lots of obstacles to it because people at CIA got rewarded for having an intelligence piece appear in the president's daily brief, for example. They didn't get rewarded for putting a piece of research on Intellipedia. So that was a uphill battle that you had to fight. But luckily, the two fantastic officers who were in charge of it persevered. Eventually, in 2009, they won a very prestigious Civil Service Award, Service to America Award, for their work on IntelliPedia, and it is still used today. So I think of my own career as a manager that the best thing I ever did was just say yes to somebody else's good idea.
Can you tell us a bit about the IntelliPedia user experience?
The agency runs regular operating systems, you know, so I don't know what Windows system they're on right now, but it would look very much, it would look, I think, almost exactly like Wikipedia looks to you, but it would have all these classification markings. And it would be basically the only difference. What IntelliPedia and Wikipedia does is sort of organize this knowledge so that you can find it much more easily. And I remember one weekend when there was some incident of note in the world, and I won't say exactly what the incident was. We, you know, we don't have as much staff on a weekend, and an analyst came in to try to sort out what happened, and he searched on it on IntelliPedia, and it so happened that the real expert on the issue had posted a really useful article on the issue on IntelliPedia. And so we were able to do and respond much more quickly than if we had had to, you know, bring the analyst in from wherever they were and do all this analog kind of work. So generally speaking, it's been very effective. It can baseline analytic work so you know what's already been covered and then focus on the gaps.
You should all report to your companies. Again, if you are a New York City firefighter, drop what you're doing, report to your company. A major disaster is occurring in New York City this morning.
And so all this development work happened in the shadow of 9/11. Can you tell us about your own role in the immediate aftermath of the attacks?
I was working on trying to get information to policymakers as quickly as possible. And I spent a lot of time working on the customer end of the intelligence process. And I was deeply involved in digitizing our work processes. And so that was a big focus of what I was doing.
You were right at the heart of digital risk for a long time. So how would you describe the current risk to the average person?
Well, I think there's a lot of risk. I mean, the cyber issue is persistent and extremely difficult to counteract. There's a lot of reasons why humans are attached to their smartphone devices, are addicted to them. They want that little rush that they get from completing a task or receiving an email or a text. And the fact that digital technologies are so seductive for us as humans, I think, is one of the things that makes solving and preventing cyber attacks really difficult.
And it does feel sometimes that we're disconnected from potential threats. Unless you've been phished or doxed, then it can suddenly become very real. Are you worried people have a bit of a cybersecurity malaise?
You can think of some of the attacks that have been purported to be the responsibility of China or people working for Russia. And we don't actually know what they did. We don't know what little doomsday eggs they planted in the software. We're trying to figure out, but we don't know. So I think a lot of these attacks, they happen and they're a nuisance, but people don't feel any immediate damage from it. And I think that's a little ominous because we really don't understand what the end game for this is.
There's more news in the Evening Standard newspaper and at standard.co.uk. That's The Leader. We're back on Monday at 4 p.m.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.